preface to Maseches Megillah, we know that Amalek are the enemy that we have to totally annihilate and wipe out its memory completely. The question is, why? Why are they worse than all our other enemies where we don't have a mitzvah to do that? The simple answer is, they were the first. They opened the floodgates to all the other anti-Semites and all our other enemies. They were the first to attack us after the splitting of the Red Sea, after Kriyas Yamsuf, when all the world was afraid of us, and they weren't afraid, like Rashi says, in the name of Chazal, that we were like a hot bath that nobody wanted to touch. And they jumped into the bath, and even though they got burnt, they cooled it off in the eyes of others. But the question still remains, why were Amalek the only nation that weren't afraid to attack us after Kriyas Yamsuf? Were they totally insane? What did they think? The answer, I think, could be, up until Amalek came on the scene, there were two basic schools of thought in the world, two ideologies. There was Klal Yisrael, who believed in the Ribbono Shel Olam, and there was the rest of the world that believed in idolatry. Other forces that ruled the world, that created the world, intelligent forces of nature that ruled and governed the world, and they prayed and sacrificed to those spiritual powers that they believed controlled the world. Amalek introduced a third ideology, atheism, belief in nothing. No intelligent power that ruled the world. The world just evolved haphazardly, by accident, and that was Amalek, the atheist. A source for this could be the following Medrash. The Medrash comments on the Pasuk, Takeletz, the Upesi Yarim, hit the letz, and the fool will wake up. Letz ze Amalek. Letz refers to Amalek. And Pesi, the fool, refers to Yisro. One of the things that woke Yisro up and aroused him to join the Jewish people is the war with Amalek and the splitting of the Red Sea. So when the Letz, Amalek, was hit, the Pesi, Yisro, woke up. Rav Tzadok HaKohen comments on this Medrash, a Letz is someone who believes in nothing, and a Pesi is someone who believes in everything. Yisro was a Pesi. He believed in all the various powers and went from one idolatry to another until he finally came to a recognition that there's only one God. But Amalek were the Letz. They believed in nothing. They didn't believe even in idolatry. They didn't believe in any intelligent power that created or guided the world. And that is why we are called Reishis, the beginning, and Amalek is called Reishis Goyim Amalek, also a beginning. I like to compare it to a tug of war. You have one team on one side of a rope and the other team on the other side, and they're both trying to pull the middle of the rope over to their side. We are at one end of the rope. We believe in God. Amalek is on the other end of the rope. They believe in nothing. And the rest of the world is in the middle, people who believe in idolatry. We're trying to pull the world from idolatry to belief in God, and they're trying to pull the world from idolatry into total atheism. And this is the struggle between us and Amalek throughout the existence of this world. And that's why Amalek in Gematria is Sofek, doubt. Because Amalek puts doubts in our mind with their ideology of total atheism, that the world is only the object of haphazard circumstance, it's hard to see God's hand in the world, and puts doubts into our mind. In addition, whenever we have doubts, then we are vulnerable to the attack of Amalek. And that's what Chazal say, that as long as Amalek is in the world, Ein Hashem Shalem, Ve'ein HaKisei Shalem. God's name is not complete, nor is his throne complete, based on the Pasuk, Ki Yod Al Keis Ka, Milchama Lashem Ba'Amalek Midor Dor. Rashi learns, Ki yod al kesh ko, God lifted his hand in an oath on his throne, and he swore to wage war with Amalek from generation to generation. The name of Hashem, instead of Yud Kei Vav Kei, the full name, is reduced to Yud and Hey alone. So God's name isn't complete as long as this struggle with Amalek exists. And God's throne is only written case without an aleph instead of kisei with the aleph. Perhaps the idea is the following. God's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei, represents Hoya Hove Yehiyah. God was, is, and always will be past, present, and future. The first two letters of God's name, Yud and He, are the letters that you can use to make the words Yehiyah and Hoya, past and future. All you have to do is duplicate the letters. However, you can't make the word Hove out of Yud and He. The last letters of God's name, Vav and He, are the letters that you can use to make the word Hove present. As long as Amalek is in the world, you can still see God in the past. Look in the Torah. You can see him in the future. Look at the Navi. It's hard to see God in the present, so the Vav and He is missing from God's name. The word Kisei, God's throne, represents his divine providence. The fact that when a king sits on his throne, you know he's settled and he's controlling his kingdom. But when you look at the throne and you don't see a king, then maybe the king is dead, maybe he's not there, maybe he's not controlling his kingdom. Maybe there never was a king. As long as Amalek is in the world, it's hard to see the Aleph, God, the one, sitting on his throne. The Aleph is taken away. And when the Aleph is taken away, what's left is case, hidden, obscure. It's hard to see the Ribbono Shel Olam. Says the Vilna Gaon, those three letters that are taken from the world, the Aleph from Kisei and the Vav Hei from the name of Hashem, are replenished to the world even when Amalek is there, as long as there's a Beis HaMikdash. And that's why the Beis HaMikdash is referred to as Ki Bochar Hashem B'Tzion Iva L'Moshav Lo. God chose Tzion, he desired it, Iva, to be the place he would dwell. The word Iva, referring to the Beis HaMikdash, is spelled Aleph Vav Hei. Those are the letters that are missing from the Kisei, from God's throne, and the Vav Hei from God's name. Those letters are replenished to the world when there's a Beis HaMikdash, where there were daily miracles, where you could feel God's presence, and that offset and balanced out the negative effect of Amalek and let people feel and sense God's presence, his divine providence in the world, even though Amalek was still there. There are some significant differences between an atheist and an idolater, even though both are evil, but atheism is worse. One reason is that a person can use idolatry as a springboard to come to belief in God. Avraham Avinu did it, Yisro did it. But atheism can never be a springboard to belief in God. It's the antithesis. One can renounce his atheism and become a believer, but the atheism itself is not a springboard to belief. And secondly, an atheist who believes in no rhyme and reason to this world, that the world just evolved accidentally, and there is no intelligent powers that rule the world, can't have any kind of intrinsic morality, because there can't be right, wrong, good, or bad if the world is merely an accident by nature, by its very definition, is purposeless. So there can't be a purpose, and therefore there can't be good, bad, moral, immoral. The only morality system is situational ethics. Don't step on my toes or I'll step on your toes and the world won't be able to function. But there's anything wrong intrinsically with stepping on someone's toes can't be, because toes are just the result of an accident. On the other hand, an idolater who believes that there are intelligent forces can have an intrinsic morality. His morality may be skewed completely, and he may substitute good for bad and bad for good. But ultimately, there is morality. There is a good. There is a bad, since there is purpose and intelligence in the running of and the creation of the world. Another difference is how they look at the Jewish people. What makes us special from all the nations, the Torah says, is two things. Mi goy gadol asher lo elokim krovim elov kashem elokeinu b'chol koreinu elov. We have a special close relationship with Hashem, that whenever we call on Him as a people, He's there for us as a people, and He has been for us throughout history. Even though there have been very, very difficult times in Jewish history, we're still here. And that is one of the specialties, a specialness of the Jewish people. And secondly, Umi goy gadol asher lo chukim u'mishpatim tzadikim kechol haTorah zos asher anochi noseh lefneichem hayom. We have a Torah that guides every aspect of our life, that shows that every aspect of life is important, because if it's not important, who cares how you do it? But the fact is that God cares, because every aspect of our life is universally and eternally significant. A idol worshiper has to accept that premise. There can be a Torah. There can be a closeness to a God. He may resent it, he may deny it, but he has to accept the premise. Whereas an atheist rejects this premise completely, because he doesn't believe at all in a God. You can't be close to a God, and there can't be any intrinsic moral system of a Torah that tells you what's the right way and the wrong way, because there can't be a right way and wrong way, since everything is accidental. So the atheist totally denies any importance to the Jewish people. And the idol worshiper has to accept and recognize that we have some importance. He may resent it, deny it, but he has to accept the fact that the premise is there. Could be that's the meaning of the following Gemara later on in Megillah. The Gemara says that when Haman approached Ahasuerus and offered him 10,000 kikar kesef to destroy the Jewish people, Ahasuerus said, keep your money and do what you want. And the Gemara says it's compared to a person who had a big mound of earth on his field that he wanted to get rid of, and he couldn't find anyone to take it away. And someone else had a big hole in his field, and he was looking for landfill to fill it up. And one day the person with the hole in his field passed by the field of the one with the big mound, knocked on his door, and he said, could you sell me that mound of earth? I could use it to fill up the hole on my field. And the man said, sell it to you. I've been looking for somebody to take it away. Just take it away. So too, Ahasuerus said, just take them. I don't need your money. I've been looking for somebody to get rid of them altogether. But there's a very big difference between how Ahasuerus, the idol worshiper, saw us, and Haman, the atheist. The idol worshiper saw us, Ahasuerus, as a big mound of earth. Something, but that something bothered him. Whereas Haman, the atheist, saw us as nothing, as a hole in the ground. And that hole in the ground bothered him, because that hole in the ground considered themselves important. And that explains why Amalek were not afraid to attack us after the splitting of the Red Sea, because the rest of the world, who were idolaters, assumed there was some intelligent power that split the sea. They may not have believed it was God, but they believed there was some intelligent power guiding and protecting the Jewish people, and they were afraid to start up with it. But the atheists saw that as mere luck. Chance. The sea split from some kind of accidental reason. No intelligent force that was protecting and guiding the Jewish people. As there are apikursim who say that the sea split because the planet Venus came close to the earth and pulled the sea out of its bed. The truth is that if God chose to bring the planet Venus to make Kriyas Yamsuf, that's fine. The miracle is not how it happened. The miracle is the timing. And therefore, Amalek, who saw the splitting of the Red Sea as a total accident, weren't afraid that that accident would happen again. The rest of the world, who saw it as some kind of intelligent power guiding and protecting the Jewish people, were afraid to start up with that power. With this, we can also understand the roots of Amalek. Amalek came from Timnah and Eliphaz, the son of Esav. Those were the parents. Timnah was a princess who wanted very much to join the Jewish people. She came to Avraham Avinu and asked him to accept her into the fold, and he rejected her with both hands. And Chazal say he shouldn't have done that. You never reject somebody with both hands, but your right hand pulls close and your left hand pushes away. Avraham should have found some way of integrating her into the Jewish people, but he obviously saw the seeds of Amalek in her and rejected her. She came later to Yitzchak, and he rejected her, and later to Yaakov, and he rejected her. And she said, if I can't get into the front door in this family, I'm going to come through the back door. And she became a pilegesh to Eliphaz ben Esav, a concubine to Esav's son Eliphaz. She said, better to be a princess in the black sheep part of this family, better to be a concubine in the black sheep part of this family, rather than be a princess in some other family. So Timnah, that was the mother of Amalek, and Eliphaz ben Esav was Esav's son. Esav believed that might ran the world, that might makes right. He lived by the sword. Eliphaz was a little more refined, and he believed that money ran the world. The proof that when his father sent him to kill Yaakov, instead of killing him, he took away his money. And that's his name, Eliphaz. My God is gold, is money. Now, if your mother was rejected by the Jewish people, the knee-jerk reaction to rejection is sour grapes. If they rejected me, then who are they anyway? So Amalek had a vested interest to totally negate any importance to the Jewish people in order to feel good about the fact that his mother was rejected. But she was rejected by these nothings, so therefore her rejection was meaningless. And his father believed that money, power, might is what run the world, survival of the fittest. There's no intelligent forces guiding the world. It's all the fittest and the strongest survive. Total accident. So therefore, if your father believed that might makes right and money runs the world, and your mother was rejected by the Jewish people, the most convenient ideology to adopt is atheism, which makes nothing of the Jewish people and says that the world is controlled and run by might, power, and money.
The Daf Yomi Halacha series has been brought to you by the Beis Havad Halacha Center. To sign up for the Halacha Center's weekly interactive e-journal, please email subscribe to info@thehalachacenter.org.